A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav. You join us on the back of Sunderland's 1-0 defeat at the Stadium of Light to Millwall in what was billed as a dead rubber between two teams with nought left to play for. Yet we're still sat here scratching our heads wondering what the hell it was all about. And there's lots of questions coming away from the game, as always. So, join us this morning, or it's morning for me, it's afternoon, evening for him. Is Martin. Hi, mate.
Hello, mate. Hi, it was it wasn't really the most entertaining game of football I've ever watched, but
no. Are you glad you got up for it?
No. You know what, as well, it was one of those. It took us ages to get back to sleep. So I have a little nap before the alarm goes off. Midnight kickoff for me last night. So got back up. Went back to bed about 2:15, and it must have been about 4 o'clock by the time I actually got back to sleep. So it was certainly not worth it, but there we go.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the way it is. You can't guarantee good performances and results when it comes to Sunderland, and that's basically the crack, really. It was shite, wasn't it? I'm looking at the stats here. On paper, you'd look at it and think, well, how did we not get something? But obviously, the stats don't tell the full story because we had 13 shots, apparently. I don't remember 13 shots. Three of them on target. I think I probably remember them. Rig maybe had one.
Pembele. Somebody else. I can't remember who the third one was.
68% of the possession, 585 passes, pass accuracy of 87% of their 75. So you look at it, you think, oh, we probably deserved something out of the game. I think a draw would have been a fair result, but it was garbage. Like, as a game, it was terrible. One of the lads didn't see it and asked how it went, and I said, just imagine the worst pre-season game you've ever watched. It was like that.
Yeah.
It was certainly two teams on the beach. It was crap. I mean,
well, it was interesting because Millwall had to. If Millwall got 3 points, they were safe. So they did have something to play for. And I just thought, for us, from the team selection to the performance to the formation, it was just like nothing went right. Everything was wrong. Obviously, you know, if we'd won 3-0 with a good performance, you don't pick up on things like that, do you? You don't mention because those things were right, but you know, we'll start with the team selection.
Yeah,
when you look at the like starting Bradley Dack, he's not going to be here next season. What on earth's the point of him getting the game?
Someone's going to have to explain the thinking behind that to me, because it made no sense. I mean, yes, look, yes, we know that up front we've got issues, but what? 3 games from the end of the season, and you're starting Bradley Dack there. Is it a kind of a case of let's see what he can do? Or I just didn't get it. It was an absolute waste of time.
But it was like, you know, a few weeks ago we spoke about the remaining 5 or 6 games that we had left at that point. And you go, well, you need to use these games to answer questions that we have about people in the team, in the squad, see if they can play a part next season. And, you know, to me, like, there's a number of players there who aren't going to be there next season, who were in that squad. Mm-hmm. You know, you got Mason Burstow on the bench. He's not going to be here next season. We got Watson, who's been knocking them in for the under 21s, who we should be trying out. Yeah. I think, you know, we've found out about Pembele over the past few weeks. That's been a positive over the last few weeks. I did think he might put Callum Stiles in the centre midfield from the start yesterday, just to see if he could do a job there. We've seen him do all right at left wing back. And obviously, he's on loan with a view to a permanent move in the summer. Play him in midfield for the whole game. See if he can do a job there, because you know he could potentially be somebody who's a decent utility player to have around the squad. I don't think he's necessarily a starter for us, but play him in midfield. See if he can do that job. If not, we've made a call on him. And I just think there were so many opportunities to answer questions that we've got about people in the squad, and we just didn't take it.
Yeah, not on any occasion there. What did we learn from this game?
No.
Nothing at all. You made that point there about Watson. Down the years, there's been occasions where people are like, oh, give the kids a chance, do this. But like, genuinely, why is he not making the squads? I don't get it. Because, you know, Rigg's starting games, and we know why, because Rigg is fantastic and is a good young player. Wouldn't Watson come into that category as somebody who's similar age, really shining at a lower level with the under-21s team? He's an England youth international, so there's something there. Like, why aren't we seeing this lad involved? I don't get it. There's others in the under-21s team. Harrison Jones is another one, centre mid. Yeah. We lost Dan Neil to injury, which was the rumour through the week, so we knew, kind of had a feeling he wouldn't play. So what would have been the harm in putting Harrison Jones on the bench? And then instead we'll bring on Corey Evans, who's not going to be here in the summer because he's out of contract and they're not going to keep him on. So it's like, I didn't get it at all. And I think I didn't actually listen to it because I couldn't bring myself to do it. But from what I hear, Mike Dodds in his post-match was talking about being bored by the performance. And I'm thinking,
I've just watched it before we started recording.
You picked the frigging team. We went out in the second half. When he brought off Dak, right, in the second half, we had six defenders on the pitch. We had three central midfielders and one winger. That was the 10 outfield players on the pitch, second half. So whose fault was that? Because you picked the team. If he'd come out, there's no reason why this couldn't have happened, right? Because I know you said, Millwall probably needed the points to confirm their safety, but they were safe anyways. So, Millwall weren't going to go down. So to me, it felt like a dead rubber kind of game. Watson on the bench, Harrison Jones on the bench would have made a difference. Even, you mentioned Burstow being on there. Ogusunyi, the young Belgian kid who's playing well for the youth teams. Big lad, forward. Why not, even just for the experience to be put around the squad on a match day, why wouldn't that have been a better option than putting lads on there who are on loan, who aren't going to be here, or people who are going to be out of contract? Like Dak, they're not going to get kept on. Like, why wouldn't you, at this stage in the season, in front of the home fans as well, which, the home fans always get behind a young player when they come off the bench and make their debut or whatever, or, it's one of their first games. Like, you've seen the way that Chris Rigg's been treated. Why wouldn't you just try something? Or even get them on the bench, like I say, when it's 0-0, because it was 0-0 for most of the game. Then get them on and have a go at something different. I don't get it. I'm sure the explanation will be, they're young. We've got to protect them. Ah, bollocks. Like, at this stage of the season, that makes no difference. They might as well have been out there. And for me, in the last few games, we should only really be looking at players who are going to be here next season. Because what's the point otherwise? It makes no sense.
And even, with you said earlier about Rigg starting, we have seen Rigg obviously in the past, four or five games he's started. Each one, but he's started out position. Like, to me, put him in the number 10 spot, see if he can do a job there, because I reckon he can. And I think, it's good that he's getting the first team experience, good that he's starting games, all that sort of stuff. But he's starting games out of position. And I think put him in his right place. There was an opportunity there with Dan Neil being injured. To drop him a bit deeper and see if he can do it. And, I think Dodds had spoken about him playing sort of right wing almost and saying, young central players kind of come into the team in a wider position because there's less pressure. That's a perfect game for him to come into in centre midfield and see what he can do. And you can always switch him about if he's struggling, but I don't think he would have struggled. And it's far easier to see after watching the game like that. But it's just that lack of joined up thinking in the team selection, how we're approaching these last few games. And, even coming off the back of the Leeds game, where we defended really well and got a point, the West Brom game, where we defended really well, got 3 points from a set-piece goal, both those games, we looked really solid. We'd set up well. We looked really well structured. And, you know, we rightly gave the team praise because of that, because we had set up well. We tried to do the same yesterday in a home game where we've got to take advantage of the crowd. We've got to take advantage of possession. There's a lot more onus on us to maintain the ball and create things and break teams down.
And let's be fair as well, it's Millwall. They weren't going to come here and try and dominate the ball, were they? We know exactly what Millwall were going to do. So that, like, you're right, you know? Why would you play five at the back against a team who were going to sit back?
No, it's just baffled me. And I thought he would, because I just think he's trying to be too clever.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did play five at the back. However, it was often a kind of a four, wasn't it, when we went forward, when we had possession, because Styles was coming into centre midfield.
Yeah. In felt like Clark was playing wing back, to me.
Yeah, well, it did. And I just thought we kind of overcomplicated what should have been a relatively straightforward thing. Like, we had a lot of possession, you had a lot of passes, you read the stats out at the start. How many of them were safe passes? Oh, you know, there were so much going backwards, keeping possession for the sake of it. And we never once tried to play a risky ball, play somebody through, try to, you know, slice
The only people who did were Riggin 09. The only players who I saw try and play a sort of pass which was different to the norm, I saw Rigg do it two or three times in the first half. And there was my mate brought an Aston Villa fan to the game with him, so he'd never watched us before.
Be a treat for him.
About five or six times during the game, he pointed at Luke 09 and was like, who's he? Because some of the passes he's playing out from the back are brilliant. Well, he's, you know, somebody who half the fan base don't particularly like for some reason. But, like, you know, they were the only two players who tried anything. It was so frustrating to watch. It was boring. You're like, the players you look at and think they are in the team to provide that creativity were being negative. Yeah. Clark, I don't think he went past his man once.
No, he struggled. He's struggled since he's come back into the side, hasn't he? I don't know what the reason for that is, whether he's not fit or fully fit, which he probably isn't, but...
Well, I made the point yesterday, if you were a Premier League team watching him, hoping to pay big money for him, watching the last couple of games, you would be put off, I think. I think he's been terrible the last two games. He was awful at West Brom, and then he was really poor here too.
It might work in our favour than that. It could be a whole subtle plot. Mike Dodd's master plan to put people off buying Jack Clark. But I actually thought Bellingham started deeper, didn't he? So Dak came into the side up front and Bellingham dropped back. And I actually thought for 15-20 minutes of the first half, Bellingham looked a lot better in that sort of deeper role. He was coming, getting on the ball. And he switched the play a couple of times. But of course, at half time, we made the switch, put Bellingham back up front and brought Dak off. And we just kind of went back to looking as sharp as a very blunt spoon, didn't we?
Yeah, it was just no nouse at all from the midfield. It was, I mentioned pre-season before, that's what it felt like. It felt like a pre-season game. We just didn't try anything where you're thinking, you know, carve them open a little bit, have a go. I mean, obviously you're looking to, majority of the time anyways, you're looking at Jack Clark to be that player who provides something and a spark. And if he's not on it, it makes it difficult. But I just, you made a point earlier about the lack of joined up thinking, and that, I think you've nailed it there. I think we were just trying to be too clever. I was watching it, and you've got like 09 bombing on down the right at times. Pembele basically playing as the furthest forward player at times. Rigg.
How was I?
Occasionally hugging the touchline, then dropping into the middle. Clark, I was looking at it when the centre halves were playing around at the back with the ball. Clark and Pembele were basically level on either side of the pitch. So Clark was like a left wing back. Styles was then tucking inside as a centre mid. Why are we trying to be like so over the top and clever? What do we learn from messing around with a system like this at this point? I can understand playing five at the back when you're away from home. You're playing a difficult team. They're going to come onto you. The onus is on them. As we did at Leeds and West Brom, it works. Dodds has proven it works. He done it against Leeds in the home game as well. So we know that works. But against Millwall, like, no disrespect, but come on. They weren't going to come here and try. They'll have watched our home performances, as all coaches do. They'll have sat down, probably watched our last five games at home or whatever. They'll have seen what we do. They'll have seen we dominate the ball. So why would you then line up with five at the back effectively? No width at all. No creativity. Surely the answer was to play a bit more of a fluid system which suited the players, especially when you look at the players we had out there. Like, all of them players can play an attacking brand of football. So you're looking at it and you're thinking, it would have suited them more to play perhaps with a back four, with a number 10 behind a striker. You looked at the bench and the players we had on the bench. Mundell's on there, Barr's on there, Oshish was on there. Like, those lads can offer something. They might not be the finished article or whatever, but they can offer something. And that would have made more sense in this game. Like, and nobody can tell me otherwise. If the plan was to play Dak up front, which, you know, whatever, you know, it's not as if we've got a really obvious centre forward in the team. So wouldn't it have made more sense to put someone directly behind him in that 10 position, trying to feed balls to him, trying to spray the balls into Clark's feet, trying to get Reagan involved a bit more? There was no link. We kind of had, in fact, the link for me at times was Styles. Styles was coming inside and playing as a number 10.
He was.
Yeah, it was just really weird.
There's one point in the first half, Dak dropped all the way back and picked the ball up off Ballard to try to get involved in the game. He was having to come that deep to actually get involved in play. But it's just baffling. And like, you know, we talked about Pembele before, right? And over the, yeah, he's had a couple of games, Leeds away, obviously his first game, West Brom away, played pretty well. And you kind of go, okay, well, he exists and he looks a half decent player. The big question for me about him is, can he defend? Because if he can't play right back, we've seen he can play right wing back. If he can't play right back, he's not going to work out here. Because more often than not, we're going to play a back four.
Yeah.
So yesterday against Millwall, that game was a perfect chance to put Pembele in the back four and go, okay, let's see how he does playing as part of a flat back four and see if he can actually be a right back for us. Because, you know, there's no way in the world we're going to have a full season next season playing with five at the back. No way in the world. It's just not going to happen. So unless Pembele can play right back, he's not going to get a string of games here, is he? Because we need a fullback who can defend. So try him out. See if he can play right back. Let's see. He's had a couple of games playing wing back. Let's see if he can defend. And it was just baffling, like, from start to finish.
Do you think there's an argument to be made about Mike Dodds trying to protect himself a little bit with some of these games and the team selections? Because it all seems very safe. Like you've just said there, and we've mentioned it repeatedly here, why not give this young kid a chance? Why not give this young kid a chance? Why not try Pembele as a right back? You're right. Those are risky decisions if you're in the middle of the season and you've got lots to play for. But at this stage, they're not. Like, try these things and see what happens. And there's been that accusation leveled at him that he's just being really safe just to protect himself a bit. Because he doesn't want to have, like, massive defeats on his record. If he can sort of see out the end of the season with maybe a draw and another win or some kind of, well, respectable results, I guess, where you haven't been battered or whatever, that on his CV, it doesn't look too bad. We've gotten, what was it, 5 clean sheets out of 6 before this one? Like, there is the argument to be made that he's protecting himself a little bit because he maybe wants to further his own opportunities off the back of this.
I was watching his interview after the game. And that's the second time. Like, how many games has he been charged? 10 games or whatever it is. That's the second time he's throwing the players under the bus.
Yeah.
And he's completely gone. They didn't do what I was telling them to do. You know. And if he was looking at his long-term future here and going back to being coach under whoever comes in as head coach for next season, he'd be going, oh, you know, young players, we're giving them the opportunities, we've got to learn, blah, blah, blah. He chucked them under the bus completely, put the whole blame onto them, had nothing to do with his tactics or anything, but he put all of the blame onto the players. Anyway, he was talking about the inconsistency that the young players have, and they've got to get far more consistent with their own performances, and the inconsistency is not acceptable. Now, he was looking at it as an interim head coach with the intention of stepping back into his former role at the end of the season. He wouldn't be talking like that.
No.
And that isn't the language of somebody who is a trusted person for the players on the players' side. That's somebody who has ambitions of being a manager. And I think he actually wanted this job, and he's not going to get it with the performances that the team have put in under his stewardship in the spells he's had in charge. So I would suspect he's off at the end of the season because that interview, the Blackburn one, you can understand, right? Because that was an absolute capitulation, wasn't it? That was just a bloody awful performance. The players down tools or whatever went wrong that day went wrong. The game against Millwall was different. It was down to team selection and tactics. And I actually think if he was protecting himself, the question is, I guess, would he be protecting himself more by being a bit more risky, putting Watson in for half an hour, putting Pembele at right back, playing Rigg through the centre.
They're normally things that interim head coaches, caretaker managers do. Like, how many times down the years have you seen it where a manager's been sacked or they've left and they put a caretaker in charge and the caretaker does everything that everyone wanted them to do when the manager was in place? Like, under Dodds, we haven't done that. It's really, really strange. He's kind of just continued on what we were, or at least he's not done anything which kind of differentiates him from anybody else who's been in that position in terms of, like, you know, if he knows he's not going to get the job, why wouldn't you take a few more risks? That's what I don't get.
But I don't get it because he's managed in a very short-term thinking way. And if he was coming in just to see the season through, help the club find out things about players, give players opportunities in preparation for next season, you've got much more of a longer-term mentality on team selection tactics and all that sort of stuff. He's been the opposite of that. He's been really short-term in his team selection and his tactics. And it's all been... Look, it's difficult to argue with in some respect because he's managed every game as that's the most important. The next game's the most important. We have to get a result out of this game and I'm going to utilise what I've got to get a result out of this game. And that's difficult to argue with, right? But if he was coming in with the intention of, let's say the season out, your job's safe, you'll go back into the coaching staff at the end of the season, we just want you to see the season through, he would choose differently, I think. And it suggests to me he's kind of not probably singing from the same hymn sheet as the club are. You know, he's been critical of the makeup of the squad, the experience and all that sort of stuff, hasn't he?
You mentioned the striker thing as well this time, didn't he?
And that's taken me by surprise. I kind of didn't expect him to do that. And he's right in a lot of what he said. I completely agree with the lack of experience, lack of a striker, all that sort of stuff. I think everybody does. But it surprised me that he's come out and been vocal about that. He's been vocal about the need to change the transfer strategy in the summer, all that sort of stuff. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens and where he goes to, because the longer it goes on, you know, we've spoken about before, haven't we, whether we need a sort of clean out of the coaching staff for next season as well. And I think we'll get it, because I don't see Dodds staying on with how he's going about the job.
No. And I think a lot of people were undecided on, maybe going back a month or two, a lot of people were undecided on what the right approach would be in the summer. I think he's maybe made up a lot of mind. He's made mine mind up, because I was always of the belief, like, the way things work now, we've said this loads of times, it's just a cog in the machine, and you know, once one of them cogs needs to be repaired, you take it out, you put a new one in, things keep working. And I've always had that kind of feeling about the coaching staff, in that the way things are, we shouldn't need massive overhauls of staff and stuff. And I don't think we'll get a massive overhaul, but I just think that everything we've seen recently kind of points to needing change. Whether we get it, I don't know. I'm still not convinced we will, mind. I'm still not convinced we're going to get like a whole new backroom team coming in. But I think we need it. I just think that what you've kind of witnessed in the aftermath of Mowbray leaving, you know, when you add everything together, the aftermath of Mowbray leaving, so that period between him leaving, Beale being appointed, and everything since, I think what you've seen is just a lot of the same stuff, a lot of the same issues which were there when Mowbray was in charge. And when you look at it, it's the same coaching staff, it's the same voices in the dressing room, it's the same people taking the training sessions. I'm sure they've got great relationships with Mike Dodds, and I'm sure between the players and Mike Dodds and Michael Proctor, and I'm sure that they've got great relationships with the players, because, you know, they're pretty tight-knit. But I don't know. I think in my mind, I'm thinking, and I keep saying this, but it's just the way I think in the summer, every decision has to be geared towards, we are trying to get promoted. We're going to try and finish in the top two. Same way Ipswich looked at it this year. Same way the other teams who came down from Premier League looked at it. Sunderland need to be up there next season. And you've got to be ruthless with your decision making. And I think if you had an independent voice, somebody with, you know, 20, 30 years experience in the game, who's been around football clubs, seen the way the inner workings are at top level, bottom level, all the rest of it. If you had somebody just monitoring Sunderland, watching what goes on, I think the feedback to the club would be, and to the owner would be, you need to have a bit of a clear out this summer. You need to change things up. You need to bring in people with a different mentality, fresh ideas. You need a head coach who's got experience at doing this and getting promoted, because Mike Dodds wasn't an experienced coach when he took over from Beal. Michael Beal really wasn't an experienced head coach. He had very little experience in terms of management. I think it's so obvious what we need. And if, like I say, if you were in an independent voice from outside the club with no affiliation to Sunderland, no existing relationships to any of these coaches or anything like that, you would be looking at this and saying, you need to have a bit of a sweep out in the summer. I'm not convinced we're going to get it, but I hope we do. Because I do think that that's what we need to get promoted next year. I think if you just bring in a head coach who's maybe allowed his assistant, and that's it, and you continue on with the same coaching staff, I just don't see how you get promoted with that structure. I think it needs change.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, we've kind of been through stages before, haven't we, where a manager comes in, brings two or three coaches, and then he leaves, everything changes, another manager comes in, brings coaching staff in. And there's probably a happy medium somewhere, isn't there? There's probably a situation where your manager comes in, brings his assistant and his first team coach, and the coaches underneath stay the same or something like that. But you're right, I think there's a need for it to be freshened up. And, you know, to be fair to the club, no, I'm sure nobody's sat there watching the game on Saturday and watching the recent performances, bar the odd one or two exceptions, and thinking, oh, this is going well. We're on course for winning the championship next season with what we're doing now. Like, no, nobody's going to be thinking that. And it's fairly obvious where tweaks and changes need to be made, isn't it? Yeah. And, you know, I don't think any of us would go, you know, we've got to go back to the manager being the, you know, the overall leader of the club, the manager signing every player, deciding who to sign, bringing his own playing staff in, as well as backroom staff, only for 6 months, 9 months, 12 months down the line, that to all change and to be ripped up, and a new manager comes in wanting his own players. Like, I don't think anybody's going to say or argue we should go back to that, because I don't think many football clubs in the country or in Europe are doing that now. And that's what kind of landed us in all sorts of problems to start with, didn't it? But there's a happy medium somewhere, isn't it? I think it's getting a bit more control over things from manager's point of view. It's going to make the job more attractive to start with. When you look at some of the managers who are linked with the club, you talk about Steve Cooper and people go, oh, he wouldn't. He's out of our reach. We never have a chance of getting him. But like for me, if you look at it completely just on paper, right, you go, we should have an absolutely great chance of convincing him his next job's with us. One of the biggest clubs in the Championship gets a backing to get a club up, and you know it could be a great job for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he wouldn't take it if he's got no say in transfers and all that sort of stuff, if he can't bring in his own backroom staff. So there's got to be a little shift of things somewhere along the line to put a manager like that in our reach, because you know fundamentally he should be more than gettable, I reckon, for us for next season. So it's going to be interesting to see how we actually change things. But again, like nobody's going to be sat there going, ah, this is tremendous. This is like we're going to get 100 points next season. Like it's clear that we're not. There's clear things that have to be changed, and you know you can only hope that those little things, big things that do need changing are changing. You know, it'll quickly become apparent whether they have been or not, won't it?
Yeah, we've done a good job of avoiding the performance again, by the way. We keep doing this on the pods. We descend into just talking about the long-term future, but it's hard not to when the games are so boring and pointless, really. But I will quickly touch on a few things from the game. Star performers, if there were any, who would you say had a good game? I think Chris Rigg had a good first half. Like I say, I think 09 had a good game. I don't think he put a foot wrong, really, all day. At least he did okay.
I thought Ballard did all right.
Yeah.
Rigg looked, again, he looked great when he got on the ball, when he had the chance to get on the ball in a central position, but all too often he wasn't involved enough, and that was because of his position. I thought Pembele struggled to really make an attacking impact on that right-hand side.
Yeah, it felt like really early in the game we tried to get him involved quite a bit, and then it just stopped. Like a lot of the play was coming down the right hand side to him, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. So there was a shift there.
No, I thought Ekwa had a poor game again after having a little bit of a upturn in form. I think he's kind of reverted back to his form for most of the season.
It wasn't like he kept losing the ball. It was more so he was just so unambitious with his passing.
Yeah, it was safe. It was just the mentality of the whole side.
Yeah.
We'd rather, you know, keep the ball, pass it backwards, and give somebody else the responsibility of creating something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you pick out the player, as you mentioned before, like 09 was one who will try to create something, and he will play maybe a more risky pass, but it's with the right intention. But I think, like, you know, say Rigg did all right. I thought, you know, as I said earlier, I thought Bellingham had a spell of maybe 15 minutes where he was spraying the ball around, picking up deeper, looking more influential on the game than he has been playing up front, but he kind of drifted off. Dak was completely anonymous. Clark, nothing happened for Clark. He was actually lucky not to get sent. I thought the referee was going to send him off in the first half.
Well, I think they were trying their best to get him sent off as well.
No, they were.
They'd obviously recognised he was our best player and thought, let's wind him up. And it worked. Yeah. It worked because there was a couple of occasions where he brought people down. I'm like, you're going to get sent off. And the ref was shite, mind. That's another thing I've got to mention. Probably one of the worst referees we've had all season. He was terrible.
And in the lead up to their goal, it was Clark kind of gave the ball away, trying to win a free kick.
Mm-hmm.
Ball got played into him. He didn't protect it well enough. He went down trying to win a free kick. Referee didn't give it. Broke loose to Elise. He got tackled. Then they sprung and went through and scored, didn't they?
Yeah.
And, you know, that was potentially getting into Clark's head and him trying to win a free kick rather than trying to just put his body on the line and protect it. But, like, you know, after that, you're kind of struggling to pick out anything half decent. You know, it was nice to see Corey Evans come back, and I don't necessarily agree with you that he won't be here next season. I wouldn't be surprised if we give him a year just for have around the club, because I think depending on who comes in, they might decide he's well worth keeping around the club for another year. Barr looked all right when he got the ball. He brought it down nicely.
Million step overs and doing nothing with it again.
Well, that's Barr, isn't it?
Yeah.
He can look decent on the ball, but in terms of productivity, again, now, here's one. Dak's corners in the first half.
Oh.
Dak's corners were all right.
Yeah, they were all right. Oshish's corners, though.
Were awful. Mean,
it was clearly tactical, but it was like the tactic was to pass it straight to the feet of the man at the first post. It was bizarre. It was obviously tactical. He'd obviously been told to do it. But they were terrible. But yeah, Dak's corners, yeah, fair enough. They were decent.
Yeah, you know, if you're really scraping the barrel now, like, aren't we?
There was a bloke on, because I listened to the phone in on BBC Newcastle while I was driving home, and there was a bloke on fuming about the fact he was taking the corners. He's like, have you ever seen a centre forward who takes corners from both sides of the pitch? What's that all about? And Gary Bennett was like, well, nobody mentioned Harry Kane, yeah? But we are scraping the barrel, though.
What I found puzzling about that, though, is last week, Styles takes the corners. We score from one.
Yeah.
He doesn't let you take one.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
And again, it's kind of like,
overcomplicated.
What's going on?
Yeah. Well, that's the overcomplication of simple shit, isn't it? I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right. Yeah. Styles' corners are actually decent last week. We score from one.
They were.
And then he doesn't take a corner again. Weird.
Yeah. Nuts.
Yeah. So, yeah, we are really scraping the barrel for points to take from the game. I have to mention the ref. Like, he was shite. He was shocking. First half, he gave everything to them. Every little 50-50, every little niggly thing went to them. Like, he was awful. But, yeah, it kind of just all melded into one. The kind of the game, the atmosphere, the performance, the way that we set up. Everything was just boring.
That was our 10th home defeat of the season. I think Rotherham and Sheffield maybe have lost 10 as well. Actually, I can't remember who it was. It was Rotherham and somebody else had lost 10 as well. But nobody else has lost more.
Mad that when you think about it, because there was a point, I'm sure, around the turn of the year where we were sitting going, oh, our home form's been brilliant. And like it's the one thing we've improved on this year. And it's just been such a downturn.
Because last year it was pretty poor, wasn't it? And I think early on in the season, we had a relatively good start at home. But if you look at our run of home game, is it the Plymouth game is the only one that we've won at home since New Year's Day?
We haven't won at home since February, which will have been, Plymouth. Plymouth.
Beale's last home game, wasn't it?
Plymouth and Stoke. Stoke at the 27th of January, that was at home. 3-1 at home. We beat Preston on New Year's Day, and then we've only beaten Stoke and Plymouth at home since.
So, like, Dodds hasn't won a home game since he took over from Beale.
Yeah, it's shite.
Like, it's just crap, man.
But like I say, and we repeat myself a bit here, it was a negative team selection. It was negative in terms of setup. So while we dominated the ball, I don't know a single team in the world that plays five at the back at home with a, basically an attack midfielder up front in both halves. We didn't have a winger on the right-hand side. Like, we weren't going to score. We could have been playing until midnight and we wouldn't have scored because we weren't set up to score goals. It doesn't matter how much of the ball you have. If people aren't willing to take chances and people aren't willing to cross the ball and you haven't got people in the box who can finish chances and have a proven record of finishing chances, then you're not going to score goals. And like, it's all right him coming out in the press after and whinging about the striker thing. We're all very much aware of the problem. But he didn't even attempt to put a striker on the pitch. Himyar was sat on the bench, and I know people aren't sold on him, but can't tell me Himyar wouldn't have been any better or worse than trying Dak in that first half.
Well, I think, again, it's all of it's scraping the barrel, isn't it? It's just like,
yeah, we are.
But you know, going back to the point I made at the start, like, play Himyar, he's more chance of being here next season than Dak has.
Yeah, that's
given the last three games. And see if he can do it, because every chance you make a decision on him based on what he does. If he plays all right in those three games, then yeah, he might stick around the squad next season. If he looks way out of his depth, as he has done for most of his appearances, you're right, he's definitely out on loan next season. So again, you're leaving question marks about players that we don't need to leave question marks about.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to find out anything about Dak that's going to influence what we do next season.
Yeah, that segues us lovely into the Twitter questions this week.
Oh, there you
go. The very first one is about him, yeah. So we asked the Rota Report followers on Twitter to send us in some questions for today's pod. We've had loads of replies, so apologies if we don't get through them all. We'll try and do it quickfire style. Although we say quickfire and we end up spending minutes at a time on questions. We're absolutely hopeless at it. Jason Beatty's asked about him, yeah. He said, what's your view on him, yeah? Multiple managers don't seem to want to use him even when there's a lack of options and nothing to play for. Contradicts pre-season when it looked as though he was going to be the main striker. I mean, I've talked about this quite a bit. You know, I agree. Like, when I was watching him in pre-season and I seen he got four goals from four games, all right, it's pre-season. You kind of take... We always say results and performances don't particularly matter in pre-season. However, when you sign a striker and he gets four goals in four games and he's, you know, he's just coming to the club, and one of them was against a La Liga team, a decent opposition, you're going, oh, fair enough, he might be decent, him. And I just think he was managed poorly from the off. I think he was put into the team for the first game of the season against Ipswich, and we didn't even attempt to get the ball into him. So he looked, don't get us wrong, I'm not saying that, like, we might have missed the boat on him, or there's something there, and I'm the only one saying it, and all this. I'm not saying that. But I think you could put any striker in the world up front in our team, and they would look shit, because we don't create enough chances for them. And I thought he was sold down the river in that first game, where he was just put out there. He didn't touch the ball once because nobody got it into him. And then he was brought off, and then we never saw him really after that for a long time. And then Mowbray would come out after, this was even going into like November, December time. Mowbray was coming out and mentioning Himyar whenever he was like, it was just weird. He would get asked a random question and he'd start talking about the strikers and the fact that Himyar's this and Himyar's that. And, you know, to me, he's a young kid and like, we've signed players who really aren't ready yet, who are probably more for the next couple of years or so, and he's one of them. And unfortunately, he's just not ready, but he might be in a couple of years' time. But regardless, I go back to what we were saying just before about this game with nothing to play for. Why wouldn't you just give him an hour instead of Dak? What was the point in playing Dak for 45 minutes? So like that's what, whilst I kind of look at him here and think, yes, he's not ready, he possibly needs a bit of time, he's possibly going to need a loan next season. That's fine, because look at every club in the country who've got young players. That's what they do, they loan players out. It's not unusual to do that. We sign young players and people are expecting them to be ready straight away, and it's not fair. And with Himyar, it's like, right, we've got three games left. Why wouldn't you just give him a go, at least for an hour in one of those games? And this was the perfect opportunity instead of playing Bradley Dak. So I kind of feel sorry for him. I would loan him out next season, to be honest. I think he needs to go somewhere and play 30-40 games, even if that's in League Two. You know, go somewhere where you're going to get roughed up a bit.
Yeah, I think you're right in terms of next season for him. I think the two biggest things in terms of how he's done this season, like in pre-season, one, we were getting crosses in. Like that goal he scored against, it was Mallorca, wasn't it? That was a header from a cross. And he was linking up really well with Pritchard. I think Pritchard created two or three of his goals in pre-season. Yeah, yeah. with balls into the box, and he seemed to have a really nice understanding with Pritchard. But you see, we never got crosses in for him. And you got, I actually thought against Ipswich, he did all right. He didn't look completely out of his depth. He kind of did all right. He just looked like a striker who wasn't getting a great deal of service. He got dragged off, and then he didn't start another game for Mowbray, did he? And I thought, you know, for all of the good things that Tony Mowbray did for us, his treatment of Vermeer was bizarre.
Yeah.
It really, really was bizarre and really poor. And I think he's had a confidence knocked and all that sort of stuff as a young lad coming into a different country. But I think, you know, some of the under 21 performances that you've seen from him, he hasn't helped himself. He hasn't looked enthusiastic. He's not running around. He's just looks disinterested. Mm-hmm. So it's a funny one. But again, like I would chuck him in for the three games or the two games now that we have left and go, well, you've got a chance.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know what it is? It's even if you get a chance to get a loan to a League One club next season rather than a League Two club. That's your opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Show them what you've got. Maybe there'll be scouts in attendance who might be looking for players next season, yeah. No, yeah, I agree. I think he needs a loan next season. When I'm talking about decisions being made to gear us up for promotion, that's not a player you keep around the first team squad next season.
No.
He needs to go and play games.
And look, if we've got any aspirations of finishing even in the playoffs next season, we have to have three strikers who can come in and score goals.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least
contribute and get on the pitch and look involved. Because like you look at the Championship top scorer list, there's not many strikers in it. Teams in this league don't seem to play strikers who score goals, but teams in this league do play strikers who get involved, who link up the play, who do more than just stand up there, which is, I think, what we need.
Yeah, being a threat, isn't it? And
yeah,
you know, I'm saying strikers who score goals. I'm not saying we need three players who are going to score 20-plus goals next season around the squad, but it's actually looking like you can score a goal, looking like you can threaten, like you can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't shown that.
Yeah, yeah. Adam Royal says, would you keep Dodds in the coaching team or have we seen enough that we need a fresh approach? Yeah, we've already answered that. He says he would let a manager bring in their own number two. Yeah, we've kind of already touched on this quite a lot, but I would be looking to move him on, personally. I don't want him kept around the club. Nothing against the guy. Sure, he's lovely. Sure, the players love him. Sure, the staff love him. Sure, he does a great job. Sure, he turns up to work early and leaves late and all the rest of it. Sure, that Mike Dodds is an asset. But I just think we need fresh ideas. Joel Robson says, if you were to bring in any current or former Sunderland player to host the podcast, who would it be and why? Well, that would put me out of a job. So that's not good. I like Alex Ray. I just like every time I watch him on live shows and stuff, I think Alex Ray is funny. Or Ali McCoist, maybe. You know, he's a former Sunderland player.
Could do a job. Stretching a little bit with Roy Keane, former Sunderland manager. Ali's brilliant.
Yeah.
And you listen to him on the podcast with Gary Neville.
Can you imagine Roy Keane watching us at the minute and coming on here and doing reaction pods? Gee, it'd be good value, like. Liam says, who will be our head coach next season if you lot could guess, and who would you want? So who do you think it'll be? Who do you want? I think I've got a feeling it's going to be Will Still. I'm not in favour of that, but I think that's who it'll be. I would, and this probably isn't popular. I would love it to be Steve Cooper, by the way. Like, he would be my number one choice, but my number two choice would probably be Paul Heckenbottom. I don't think that's going to be a popular thing to say, but I just think, got Sheffield United promoted last season with 90-odd points. You know, wasn't a particularly glamorous appointment by them. Had them playing decent football, good record with young players. You know, used to play for Sunderland, so he knows the club, he knows the area. I don't think Paul Heckenbottom would be a terrible appointment at all, just given what he's done recently. But I think it's going to be Will Still. I've just got a feeling it's going to be. I don't know about you.
I think Heckenbottom on paper is more likely, because he kind of fits the profile of what we've gone for before.
Yeah.
Like he's out of work. There's no compensation to pay anybody.
That's a big one.
He's experienced in the Championship. And like that's the manager that we've gone for with everybody, haven't we? Lee Johnson, Alex Neil, Tony Mowbray, Beale, to a slightly lesser extent, but you know, still has that experience, English manager. So if you kind of look at everything on paper, I would say Heckenbottom is more likely to get it. The two things that put a question mark over that is, one, I think he was out of work when Mowbray left. So I think he'd left Sheffield United by then.
I'd have to check that up.
But I think he had. So in that case, it's like, well, why didn't we go for him then? And also, he has certainly been out of work since Beale left.
I think so you're right. You know, why wouldn't we? He lost his job on the 4th of December.
So it was around the same time, wasn't it, as Mowbray? And obviously, that might have been too soon for him or what have you, but he was certainly available when Beale left. And I can understand the rationale of taking your time to appoint a new manager. However, if it is going to be Heckenbottom, there's only things to be gained, I think, by giving him the last five or six games of the season. You know, we're safe. We're not going to go down. Get into the club, have a look at the players, make calls about them for next season. And the fact that we haven't done that makes me think it's not going to be him. Will Still is a complete gamble. Like, I just think it's a completely unnecessary risk to take. Because it could be brilliant, but I kind of have this this nagging doubt. It's almost like a cartoon manager.
Yeah. Like, I can't put my finger on it. Like, I'm not having him. Like, I don't know. If he come in, I would be really supportive, obviously, as I always am with new managers, but there's just something about that I didn't like. I don't know.
You know, we've spoken about it before, right? And I think any manager who comes into Sunderland, and especially now, after everything that's gone on over the past, 9 months, the person who comes in has to completely unite everybody. And that's fans, players, board, the whole club. And it's a really big ask. I think somebody like Cooper would do that. I think he's probably the one. Like, unless he went down the route of Roy Keane. We know the club have tried to get Keane back. Before Alex Neil came in, they tried to get Keane back. So there's obviously a liking for him at some level. And like I think he would unite a lot of the fan base just because of his personality and who he is. And, you know, he's been here before and he's got an affection for the club and he understands the size of the club and the enormity of the task that he's got. And he's certainly not overawed by that. And you kind of need somebody who's almost bigger than the club to come in and take charge of it, like Peter Reid did.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I don't think Will Still's that person. And I think it's going to take an awful lot for him to come in and do that. So I would really hope it's Cooper. As I said earlier, I don't think he should be out of our reach. I really don't. But I think he might be.
Yeah.
But like, you know, looking at it, he should be somebody who we just go out and, you know, I'm not saying break the bank for him, pay him crazy money, but pay him the going rate for a top end championship manager and get him in and, you know, it's a 4 or 5 year job for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Rob Ellison Davidson has said, can we get a petition to just end the season now? I think if this was I think if this was a game of Football Manager, you'd be simulating the games, wouldn't you? To get them over and done with.
Through them.
Yeah. Hazy's asked, has the pints in the Victory Club deteriorated or what? Well, I do drink in the Victory Club before the game. I think they're all right. The Deaf Club's moved into the Victory Club, so they're in a bit of transition at the moment. I think they've been all right. I don't know. Maybe it depends what you drink, doesn't it? My dad loves John Smith's and they don't do John Smith's. And he's back up his brown ale and they don't do brown ale. So he's in a huff, having to drink Caffrey's. So my dad would probably agree with Hazy. Anders Graham says, is it time to bring in some new faces off the pitch? We've clearly gone very stale and they're not showing any signs of being able to transform from the current position we're in. Yeah, a game we've already kind of talked about needing to freshen things up off the pitch. But I mean, it depends how high you go with that. Because I think there are a portion of fans who would probably like to see a new director of football or sporting director brought in. We did a piece on the site this week about Speakman in or Speakman out, and the replies to that were interesting. I think we had more people saying in than out, which actually surprised us. But
yeah,
I think it's probably a 60-40 split on that. I think a lot rides on this summer. A lot of people are waiting to see what happens this summer in terms of appointment. I think personally he deserves, you know, just to crack on. And, you know, he's had one bad season out of three or four, whatever it's been. I think he needs a chance this summer to get the head coach appointment right and get the recruitment right. But obviously there's a lot of pressure on both of those things, and, you know, nobody will be stood defend him if we bollocks it up. So, you know, I wouldn't be too keen to see a change there.
No, I think there has been some changes behind the scenes as well, hasn't there? With like the data team, there's been a few people coming and going from the sort of behind the scenes recruitment team as well, hasn't there? So there's obviously changing things up to some extent, but, you know, I think from my perspective, I think Speakman's earned more time. However, there's those really obvious things that everybody can pinpoint that need addressing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he's got to address them this summer, hasn't he? And, you know, let's face as well, he's now on to his, fourth manager? So this will be his fifth manager in his time here. I think he arrived just before Lee Johnson, didn't he? So he technically appointed Lee Johnson. But, you know, Alex Neil, Tony Mowbray, Michael Beale, Dodds, if you want to include him. And there's been some successes in there, some not so great ones. I think this one is a big one that he needs to get right. And, you know, it's a really obvious thing to say. But I think those are big decisions, which I think he deserves a chance to make. But I think he's got to get them right.
Yeah. John Wilson has said, we need an experienced motivational figure in the dressing room. They all need a rocket up their backsides, and you could tell Beale and Dodds aren't that kind of person. That kind of feeds into what you said about needing someone who's maybe a little bit bigger than the club.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, generally, that was the kind of appointment we made under Short in the Premier League, wasn't it? We would always try and get someone who was a little bit bigger than the last guy to come in, because at that point we needed a boost. So we'd be, you know, hanging around the relegation places. All of a sudden, you bring in Martin O'Neill, and then when it's not going right with Martin O'Neill, you bring in Paolo Di Canio, who's like, bloody hell, talk about needing a rocket up. You're like, that's the guy, isn't it? And then, you know, then you go after that, you've got like Poyet and Dick Advocaat and Sam Allardyce. They're all big characters. They're all big personalities. And we have moved away from that kind of appointment, naturally, because we've dropped down the leagues and the budgets aren't as big. And maybe there's, I don't want to say less pressure on the appointments, but when you're trying not to get relegated from the Premier League, you know, and that was what Short did. He would make appointments regardless of what they cost, regardless of what he had to do just to get it done to keep Sunderland in the Premier League. And over time, obviously, we felt the effects of that. But I do think we could benefit this time around from somebody like that. Now, whether that kind of appointment would fit into the way we work right now, I would question.
Well,
I can't see them doing it.
I would say Alex Neil and Tony Mowbray kind of fall into that category as at a Championship level, where, you know, people with experience, people who are, are motivated. Mowbray was captain of Middlesbrough for a long time and was very experienced as a manager. Alex Neil obviously has that kind of ability to kick people up the backside. So I don't think it's kind of away from what we've done sometimes under this regime, but it's that person who can really, you know, I think Neil and Mowbray did kind of unite everybody, didn't they? They kind of got everybody on side. And just so, you know, we've done it a couple of times in recent memory. So, yeah, it's just who does that and has the ability to take us up or be challenging next season and, you know, whatever else happens after that. Because I really think that this appointment, and I know we've talked, you know, till the cows come home about, like, the head coach's role, you know, being relatively interchangeable, and, you know, you can swap that person out if need be. But I really think we need somebody who's going to be here for 2, 3, 4 seasons. Like, we can't have another 6-month, 9-month, 12-month manager.
No.
We need somebody who's going to be here for a, you know, medium to long term, because, you know, it just creates turmoil. We're never going to progress truly unless we've got somebody who's here for a while.
Mm-hmm. Right, let's blast through the rest of these then. John Blake says, what was the worst decision made by the Sunderland hierarchy this season? Sacking Mowbray, appointing Beale, or putting Dodds in charge?
I think if you look at it, putting Dodds in charge only happens based on the other decisions being made, doesn't it?
Yeah, so enough. Like,
it kind of has a knock-on effect. I would say appointing Beale was a worse decision than sacking Mowbray.
Yeah.
I think at the time, and not wanting to rewrite history, but I think at the time I could see the logic in Mowbray sort of being dispensed with. I thought it was too early, but I thought I could see that. I could see the logic in it if we get the next one right. And obviously we didn't. So the fact that you can argue either way about Mowbray, but you can't really argue about Beale. I would say Beale was probably the one that we completely screwed up.
Stephen Bulch says, why do we insist on having every player in the box when defending a corner, free kick or long throw? Why don't we leave a player up front to at least have an option for quick release? I don't get that either. It was really irritating.
I've never understood it.
Yeah, don't get it at all.
Because, like, surely, right, it's twofold this, right? Because you leave players up front for a counter, so you've got that ability to take pressure up if you clear it. But if you leave, say if you left two players up, the opposition leaves three players back.
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
So you reduce the number of players in the box, and surely it's easier to defend in a less congested box than it is to defend in a more congested box. It's easier for the referee to spot, you know, the attackers pulling defenders and fouling people and all that sort of stuff as well. So it absolutely baffles me. Yeah. And I do not get it.
Yeah.
I would love somebody to explain it to us.
I was listening to Under the Cosh this week and I had James Collins on, and he was talking about when Martin O'Neill signed him at Villa, and him and Richard Dunn signed at the same time. And they're sitting in a meeting before the game, and Richard Dunn says to Martin O'Neill, "Gaff, I'm just wondering, what do we do on corners? Like, who picks up who? You know, do we mark zonal? Blah, blah, blah." And he went, "I've signed you two big fuckers to head the ball. So just head the ball." And he said, like, we conceded probably one goal from a corner all season. Like, yeah. You know, sometimes the simple tactics are the better tactics. I just wonder why we don't just have something a little bit more simple. Leave someone out, as you say. We've got players with pace. Why not? It's something that's baffled me for quite a while. But there we go. Tony Burns worried that we're going to start pre-season with Dodds in charge. I don't think we will, but you would never be surprised by anything when it comes to Sunderland. Colin Smith kind of agrees with us in that it was a chance to give young lads a chance. That was a waste of time. Said Watson could have played, even if it was just for 30 minutes. Yep, we've said that. 407 SAFC, Muncaster, I think it's Gary Muncaster, he said, "I'm travelling from Florida for the Chef Wed game. Not so excited now." Yeah, I'm not actually going to be at that game. I'm away for the weekend. So, I'm not particularly bothered. I wouldn't be travelling all the way from the US to come and watch it. Unfortunately, I think you might have a bit of a wasted trip, because I think Chef Wed are going to probably need to win that game. So there'll be a bit more.
Yeah, but there's another manager who kind of contradicts everything I was saying earlier. But if you're looking at one who is more of that coach role, the fella who Chef Wed have in charge is Danny Roll. I think he's done a really good job this season. I know he's been linked. And I think that Chef Wed game will be interesting for that alone, because I think he's on our radar.
Yeah. Well, I guess when you're talking about somebody like Will Still, is this guy more or less of a risk than somebody like that? Because he's already
proven... less of a risk.
Yeah, he's already proven he can manage in this league, yeah.
Yeah. And I like his style of play. I think he's got Chef Wed playing really good, positive, aggressive style of football, and I think it would go down well.
Yeah, considering the position he took over them in as well.
Absolutely.
They were on the bottom, weren't they?
And they were... Can you remember when we played them at Hillsborough earlier in the season? They were in an absolute mess, weren't they?
Yeah.
The protests against the ownership. They had the other fella in charge, and...
Darren Moore, wasn't it?
It was the other fella who they appointed after that.
Oh,
Moore had left.
Cisco Munoz, was it? Yeah.
So, you know, he took over a complete basket case of a club, and he's transformed that team. So if we're going to go for that proper, like, head coach type of role, he's somebody who I would much rather go for than Will Still.
Yeah. Aaron Simpson said when I've put the tweet out and said we're going to do a podcast in the morning, Aaron Simpson has said, "I'd just have a lie in if I was you." No chance of that in my house, mate. I've got a baby who likes to wake us up very early. There's no lions in our house, and it's obviously late for Martin. Right, I think that's about it. There's a bunch of other questions, but we've gone on long enough. So we've got next weekend. Who do we play? I'm not even prepared here. Watford away.
Watford.
Oh, another dead rubber then. So another one where we're going to see nout new. Let's see. Maybe Mike Dodds will listen to this and go, "You know what? They're right. I should have Tom Watson in the team. Why did I not think of that?" Anyways, cheers, mate. Thanks for joining us as always. Cheers to the listeners. Thanks for making it this far. Thanks for sending all your questions in. Sorry we didn't get to all of them, but yeah, a lot of them were things we'd already covered on the pod anyway. So cheers, everybody. We'll be back, like I say, after the Watford game, maybe with a preview during the week to see how things go. So see you later.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.